Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family owned from the start. Same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becklass AB to CV 2024 Proximo, Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
The John Anik and Kenny Florian Podcast. John Anik and Kenny Florian.
Love him. I can't get enough of him.
Let's hear that Boston next.
Big jab there from Duffy and Frank Mir is hurt now.
Down goes Duffy on Kong. Frank Mir does it again.
Rock'em sock'em robots here. Oh my goodness.
Hyperbole.
They're a couple of absolutely self-involved bullshit artists.
Here are your hosts, John Anik and Kenny Florian.
Headshot. Bang. Oh, done.
Tired of snooty wines and their old wine culture? Confused by words like malolactic fermentation? Yeah, we are too. So with 19 Crimes, you can do the fancy schmancy tilt sip smell routine, or don't. 19 Crimes is the rebel of wine and culture, telling the stories of rogues and rule breakers who overcame adversities. From convicts banished to Australia to the legendary icon Snoop Dogg himself, 19 Crimes wine is defiant by nature, bold in character, and always uncompromising. 19 Crimes, the official wine of UFC. Pick up in stores nationwide or online at 19crimes.com. Enjoy responsibly. 2024, Sonoma, California.
All right, good to be with you Sunday, February 19th, 2023. Ken Flo, what'd you just say that you look like an old school train conductor in that hat?
Is that what you said? Look at this.
Yeah, a little pointy at the front. I don't know what's going on.
I was absolutely going to begin the show by banging on you for that hat. I mean, you know, I'm a hat guy, right? The theme actually of my bar mitzvah back on October 5th, 1991, the theme of my B'nai mitzvah with my twin brother was hats.
Yeah.
I'm not wearing a hat today, circumstantially, but what is going on with your hat? I mean, did Archer sit on that all morning before the program? Jesus.
It's like a throwback, you know, it's a Luftgekult, which is like a reference to air-cooled Porsches in German. And
wow.
The hat, it's the first time I'm wearing it. It needs a little breaking in, or maybe it's too broken in. I don't know. I can't figure it out, John.
Lot of your Instagram followers can't figure out is how seemingly you went from being student to teacher in these Lethal Weapon classes. What's been going on over the last 3 years? It seemed like you went from student to teacher. Am I mistaken or no?
Well, I'm always a student. You know, I teach different stuff, but you know, I don't know. Are you referring to like the gun stuff or like,
mainly the gun stuff. And right. How dare I suggest that a martial artist is not always learning? I mean, we're off to a rocky start today. Anakin Foreign Podcast presented by DraftKings, by the way.
Yeah, no, I don't teach a whole lot of gun stuff. I kind of leave that to the experts who are a part of my company. But, just training a lot, man. I put a lot of time into it, trying to get better, getting there. Still a long way to go, though, you know.
All right, so. You have a jiu-jitsu seminar, I believe, coming up on February 25th. Is that accurate?
That is correct. Saturday and Sunday, I'll be in Ohio teaching some seminars.
All right. Ohio's a big state. I mean, you got to give us more than that.
Let's see. I got Brook Park. I'm in Brook Park on Sunday. Where the hell am I on
Brian
Saturday?
Brian Petrie will provide clarity in a few minutes when he joins the program.
Exactly. I am in Fairview Park, Ohio at Black Lotus Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu on Saturday. And then at 1UP Jiu-Jitsu in Brook Park, Ohio on Sunday. So I think the first one might be sold out, but if you guys are interested, you can check it out on my Instagram. Thank you, John, for that plug.
I'm not interested. No, I'm not interested, but some of our listeners might be. I'm not interested at all. If they go to Kenny Florian Martial Arts, there's a lot of stuff there. They may not necessarily get these dates and times, but it is Ohio, Saturday and Sunday. Yes. Supposedly, there are a couple spots left. I mean, how there are a couple spots left, I really don't know. But there are a couple spots left. So if you do want to join Ken Flo, you know, a couple people were reaching out to me, like, what do you think about this jiu-jitsu seminar? I'm like, I wouldn't fucking go. But they want to know. No, these people on Instagram, they want to know how your back is, right? Because they really want to know. They want to know if you're going to use painkillers to get through the workout. So maybe they have a chance to roll with you at this seminar.
You know, it's not that bad. I've been rehabbing pretty hard, so my back's feeling pretty good. It depends on how long I'm here in this chair doing the podcast, but I'll be okay.
Well,
I'll be okay.
I'll make
it. Yeah, I'll be. You'll see old Ken Flo hobble onto the mats a little bit. You know, I'll be there.
All right, I did not intend to lead the show with this, and you know, maybe Fairview Park is within driving distance for Cincinnati's Brian
Near
Petrie.
Cleveland.
And he's more of a boxing guy, though, not really a pajamas guy. So, good stuff going on. Check Ken Flo's Instagram if you want more details on that. John_Anik will not get you anything on the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu front. All right, lot to get to today. We will recap what just transpired. We're coming to you actually on Sunday morning. So many of you will ingest this many hours thereafter, but tremendous performance by Aaron Blansfield. We're going to get into all of that. Have an interesting poll question that we got a lot of response on. We'll also have Brian Petrie help us through some of the Blansfield stuff because he's pretty bullish on her, as a lot of sharps are. And we got some picks for you for this weekend. Nikita Krylov and Ryan Spann, the men on the marquee. So a lot of different things to get into. And we obviously appreciate the response on the video side, especially for UFC 284. All right, Kemflo, what else can you say, man? You got four stripes on your Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt now. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
That was part of our pre-show
meeting.
It just
means I'm old. Yeah.
But, okay. Yeah. Is that what that means? Yeah. All right.
Okay.
So, I'm going to wear my gi one of these shows. I'm going to wear my gi. So Aaron Blansfield over Jessica Andrade, rear naked show comes at 137 of round two. And I don't even know where to begin, right? I mean, there's a lot to be discussed as far as this fight on the feet, but gosh, you know, for me, it's really a guilty pleasure to see somebody out grapple somebody who's seemingly a pretty good grappler in their own right and then have their offensive jiu-jitsu take over in a blink. Aaron Blansfield, all the rage. Title shot next, as far as I'm concerned. What'd you make of the main event about 12, 18 hours ago?
Yeah, listen, I think that she showed a toughness that shows that she has that championship mindset, has that championship heart. And coming up big against someone like Andrade was, pretty obvious to say that it's the biggest win of her career. I think that on the ground, especially getting on top of someone like Andrade was where she was going to win this fight. And man, she just made it look easy. Andrade has never looked comfortable on her back. And for me, looking from the outside in, that's where she needed to take this fight. She executed beautifully. She was able to withstand that storm early on. Andrade was the more powerful striker, no question about it. She did get hit with some big shots, but there was nothing that showed me that, she was necessarily like big time hurt or anything like that. So I think she shows the toughness that I think a lot of jiu-jitsu, high level jiu-jitsu people sometimes don't show, which is a great sign. She is a fighter, make no question about it. She isn't a jiu-jitsu person that is fighting mixed martial arts. She is a fighter. And for that, I think, you know, at 23 years old, the sky's the limit for someone like Aaron Blansfield. I don't think it was a perfect performance. I think she showed that she's very much vulnerable on the feet because Andrade looked very sloppy at times. She was kind of winging a lot of shots and Blansfield had that chin a little bit too high. She was defensively not the best on the feet. But, you know, those are all things that can be fixed. Those are things that can be rectified, I think, as she gets more technical and more experience, because these are the type of fights as a fighter that you grow so much from. And having it be against someone like Andrade, who has proven herself to be elite, is just massive.
And I do think the Andrade challenge is a unique one, and sometimes it's hard to navigate. Even if Erin Blanchfield was to fight this fight 10 times over, maybe she would be more defensively responsible throughout that series. But, you know, sometimes I think in terms of risk reward, you know, you got to give a little bit to get a little bit. And in terms of the takedown, right, obviously she was in pursuit of it. She eventually got it. And then for Andrade, it sort of became pick your poison. And I guess certain people can flow. You just cannot give them the back and the rear naked choke. What can you tell us about the speed, the technique with which Blanchfield was able to execute the fight finishing choke there?
That's right. Andrade, when she was getting up to her feet, she gave a little bit too much space between her and the cage. I think she thought that that space wasn't going to be enough, and that, you know, just because she was getting back to her feet, she was going to be okay. The key is, you know, obviously, number one, you always have to protect your neck, right? It's that space between your chin and your shoulder or your chest, right? You have to get that chin to the shoulder, number one, to take away, or at least make it more difficult for her to get that choke. She didn't do that. You know, she just got up, kind of reached, expanded her position. And when you're expanding your position, you're offering up space. And that space that Blanchfield, you know, took advantage of. She took that territory for herself, landed that rear naked choke. And again, you don't always need hooks in order to do that. So the first thing you have to do is protect that space. Andrade wasn't thinking about protecting her neck. She was thinking about getting to her feet as quickly as possible. And even still, she offered up space between her armpit and hip, which allowed Blanchfield to secure that position that much more by connecting herself in, by throwing those hooks and throwing those legs into that space. So it was really three major mistakes. First, turning your back. Second, offering up that space between your neck and shoulder. And then third, offering up the space between your hip and armpit. So Blanchfield, who is so sharp with her submission skills, was not going to forgive someone like Jessica Andrade.
Almost as sharp as the tip of your hat, which is admittedly distracting me.
It is.
She's 23 years old, bro. And no, I'm just messing around. So like, there are a lot of people who have sort of planted their flag on this athlete, right? And suggested that Erin Blanchfield was going to be a future champion, if not title contender, right? A lot of our listeners, shout out to the now Arizona Diamondback, former Tampa Bay Ray, San Francisco Giant, Evan Longoria, huge Erin Blanchfield fan, as is Brian Petrie, Bob LaBolita, another one of our listeners. Everybody loves Erin Blanchfield. And at 23 years of age, it's easy to see why, if she's like your favorite fighter. I mean, cold-blooded, the perfect nickname. She's an absolute savage. And to your point off the top, sort of proving herself in terms of the toughness and the championship mindset was the first thing out of your mouth. So anyone who suggested how she was going to handle this, you know, we were going to have some long-winded conversation last week about, oh, I don't know. If you're her manager, right, you're supposed to fight Tyler Santos. You get Andrade on short notice. Mm. Very unique stylistic challenge if you're Erin Blanchfield. But she wants to be champion. You know, no hesitation in the post-fight interview either. Like, I want the winner of Valentina Shevchenko and Alexa Grasso. And I agree with her. Like, you go out and do this against this opposition, like, there's no next title eliminator. For me, it's a championship fight for Erin Blanchfield next. What are your thoughts on all that?
I'll say this. I always try to take more of a conservative approach. If I was managing her or coaching her, I like kind of a more of a slow progression, just because I want to give her the best opportunity to not only get the belt, but to hold on to that damn thing. And, you know, I think having that experience and seeing a variety of styles and being in some big spots is what's going to allow her to physically, technically, spiritually be able to get that belt when that opportunity arises. So, yeah, the big problem is that there's not a whole lot of opportunities for other fighters. Yeah, I think, you know, Shevchenko could have other opportunities. Maybe there's a couple other people that could step in and be that challenge. But Blanchfield, having that amazing performance, she might, for better or worse, get that next opportunity. You know, I think here's the problem is showing those kind of vulnerabilities and seeing what Shevchenko can do to pick apart fighters on the feet like she does. I'd be a little bit worried for Blanchfield. I think Blanchfield will be just fine if she's able to hit that takedown against Shevchenko. I think she's going to be better on the ground, no question about it. But on the feet, I would like to see more development, especially defensively, from Blanchfield before she takes on someone like Shevchenko. She's not just fighting for the belt against anybody. She's going against one of the best females to ever do it. So again, for me, I would like to see a more of a slow roll, slow progression towards someone like a Shevchenko.
I do think it's interesting if you're manager or coach, right? And it's one thing for Kenny Florian, former three-time UFC title challenger, to say that on the Anakin Florian podcast. It's another thing when potentially a championship fight emerges to be the coach or manager that says, hey, let's slow this roll. Let's fight Tatiana Suarez in a main event, or Tyler Santos, have that fight come around again. It's like, no, thank you. I don't know if she can beat John Jones's record, right, in terms of her age, and maybe Cody can chase when the 24th birthday arrives for Aaron Blanchfield, juxtaposed against when John Jones won the title, which was March of 2011. But if I'm Aaron Blanchfield, it's like, I beat Andrade on short notice, right, in that little tiny 25-foot octagon at the Apex or otherwise. Like, I absolutely want to fight for the title. And Alexa Grasso can put a wrench into all of this. By the way, every time I read our poll question, I feel like I'm on the radio again. Anakin Florian poll question at Anakin Florian Pod. Poll question is, who has the best chance at flyweight to beat Valentina Shevchenko? And you all know I love the super fight between Valentina and Zhang Weili, so I did include Zhang Weili in the poll. 29.3% of you suggest that Zhang Weili has the best chance to beat Valentina Shevchenko. 55.3% of you are on the Aaron Blanchfield bandwagon / train, which is getting more crowded by the day. Standing room only, actually, at this point in time. 10.9% of you like either Tyler Santos or Manon Fiore. Twitter only gives you four choices. And then 4.4% of you are not sleeping on Alexa Grasso, who gets the championship opportunity against Valentina 13 days from now at UFC 285. So it all sort of times out pretty well here. Blanchfield's all the rage. You can be sure we're going to have a B-roll package of her on pay-per-view for after the flyweight title fight. But if Grasso wins, then all of a sudden Valentina lays claim to an immediate rematch, and then Blanchfield has to wait, and then she's almost assuredly going to fight somebody like Tyler Santos or Tatiana Suarez, who, if I'm not mistaken, has a fight coming up this weekend for the first time in a long time against Montana De La Rosa. So a lot of different things in the air, but we congratulate Aaron Blanchfield. And now we're going to bring into the conversation the great big gun, Brian Petrie, because he has been on the Aaron Blanchfield bandwagon for a while. Like, you have a seat, right? Like,
yes.
Me and others, we're standing, right? We're standing. We're on the bandwagon now. But you have a seat because you got on there early. You had her plus 140 over the weekend. What's going on, kid? Happy Sunday.
Happy Sunday. I doubled down as well. Doubled down day of. She's plus 100. So the number came down. So I had her two different ways. Saved my night because I didn't have a great night besides that. She looked amazing. Like, Kenny nailed all the points on the ground. I was surprised that it only took one takedown, sliced through immediately, half guard, sliced through everything. Andrade said, I'm going to muscle up, forgot all her, you know, defensive abilities, got choked. But the one thing about Blanchfield, what impressed me was her stand up's a little pushy. It's a little, you know, still work in progress. Like Kenny said, she freaked out a little bit. There was, you know, because Blanchfield was throwing straight punches and Andrade was coming over the top. And there were times where she would get clipped and you could tell the freak out, but her corner was like, move. Then she'd move and reset and everything was okay. So she still got to clean some things up on there, but she's 23 fucking years old. I mean, there's plenty of time for her to do it. But her ground game, her wrestling, her resolve, her meanness, no touching of the gloves. You try to touch my gloves, get out of here with that. Yeah. You know, I love that. And every win, she's emotional. And yeah, I mean, the sky's the limit for this talented fighter. I mean, she's really good.
That was insane. That was insane to watch and get to go to bed like 9:50 p.m. Eastern. It was a beautiful thing.
Yep.
So it's Kentucky Derby time. Are you ready for the greatest 2 minutes in sports? Well, saddle up with DK Horse, an official DraftKings affiliate. So right now, new customers who download the DK Horse app can get a 100% deposit bonus up to $250. All you need to do, deposit $25 or more and complete the playthrough requirement. Download DK Horse now to join the Run for the Roses action. New customers, 100% deposit bonus up to $250 when you opt in with code FLOW, F-L-O, only on the DK Horse app today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER, 18 plus, 21 plus in certain states to open or access an account and a resident of a state where DK Horse is available. Eligibility restrictions apply, void where prohibited. See terms at dkhorse.com. One per new customer. Match calculated on first deposit up to a maximum of $250. Deposit requires two-time playthrough of settled wagers within 168 hours. Bonus released in $25 increments. Deposit and eligibility restrictions apply. See terms at dkhorse.com. In terms of Jessica Andrade, Kenny, and Brian,
this sort of save the day mentality, right? And we can go back to when she slammed Rose Namajunas on her head, wins the title, and then 3 months later on UFC Fight Pass, not on pay-per-view, she's in China defending the belt unsuccessfully against Zhang Weili. And the win over Lauren Murphy in Brazil, in theory, positioned her to fight Zhang Weili. Now, a lot of people think maybe it's going to be Amanda Lemos, but she saves the day more times than not. She is tied with Amanda Nunes for the most wins in UFC women's history, Kenny. But like, I don't know, man. Like now, all of a sudden, her claim to a potential strawweight title shot feels less firm than maybe it did 24 hours ago. So this decision, obviously, it fattens her bank account. She probably has more money than she ever dreamed of. But from a competitive standpoint, you know, I know you kind of want to slow Blanchfield's roll a little bit when it comes to the title fight. You know, I feel like Andrade kind of lost a lot in terms of at least the strawweight championship stuff. Am I wrong on that?
I don't think you're wrong. I think there's always a gamble anytime you take a fight, let alone a short notice fight like this. I think that, you know, she probably was a little overconfident. She felt that, hey, I just fought, I'm going to be fine. You know, Blanchfield clearly isn't your just regular fighter, middle of the pack, that you can go in there without a camp and not really prepare for and beat. I also think that, you know, taking a fight on short notice as well, you know, your timing's going to be a little off. You're not going to, and when you're so physically capable and when you lead so much with a lot of those physical skills, if you're not in the best shape, if you have little injuries, you're not going to be able to execute the way that you want, which is why I think we see a lot of inconsistency with Andrade. There's certain performances you're like, oh my gosh, there's no one in the world that beats her. Yeah. And then other times you're like, wait, she looks like just a regular fighter. And mm-hmm. I think that's where she needs to fill in those gaps with her technical skills a little more. I sound like a broken record. That's something I always look at. But physically, obviously, we know that she's capable. But if you don't have a full camp, if you don't have the ability to prepare specifically for someone like Blanchfield, who clearly is a threat, you're not going to get the you know, the results that you want. So I think this was a good learning lesson for her. But again, hopefully, like you said, she is very well compensated. So yeah, tough lesson.
Right, a lot of Andrade fans out there feel like she was maybe going to get a title fight in Brazil, and now that feels like it's out of reach. What do you make of all that?
So I'm on the fence about that because of what her body of work, of what she's done. Like, she took this on short. She rolled the dice. She gambled. She's like, fuck it, let's go. Main event, whatever. I can do whatever I want. And then if you go down a weight, because this was a different weight class, it's 125, you go down to 115, I think her history and the record she holds and the fact that she lost to Weili before, and if Weili has no one to fight, I think it makes sense. Maybe you might not get it in Brazil now. You might have to maybe go back to China or, yeah, you know, Korea or something, or just Vegas. But I don't know. I think the body of work she's done, this loss may hurt. But I don't think it can, you know, if they announce her fighting Weili next week, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. And again, we mentioned the name Amanda Lemos, and she could be in this mix. But like, if you're Andrade and you're trying to beat Zhang Weili either in Brazil or in China, you got to put in like close to the training camp of a lifetime, I would think.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
you know, I'm going to lead the conversation when it comes to Andrade to the Hall of Fame. But I do think this was a setback, and I can't wait to see Erin Blanchfield. Like, if I'm her manager, I'm like, hey, we're fighting for the title, like right now. Title shot, you know, period. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the fucking tweet. Title shot for Erin Blanchfield. I know Kemflo and I disagree, which is OK. He's a little bit more conservative, folks. That's OK. Mm-hmm. That's why this show fucking works. Yeah. All right, let's talk about Marcin Prachnio, because I know on broadcast it was sort of softly suggested that maybe he could have done more. But he officially lands 63 leg kicks on William Knight. That is a new single fight light heavyweight record, the third most ever landed in a 3-round UFC fight. And anyone who watched this fight probably watched the post-fight interview and saw the condition, Bri, of Marcin Prachnio's left foot. Mm-hmm. What an absolute beast. And man, did he just keep punishing a largely listless William Knight over the weekend.
Yeah, I'm surprised that a couple people took shots at Prachnio, because William Knight did nothing. I mean, he was a statue in there. I don't know what he was doing. I know he got his wheels kicked out, but it's like, buddy, go for it. Do something. His corner was imploring him, and he came out, made no excuses. I sucked. I froze. I lost. You know what I mean? He's not making excuses about injuries or this and that. So Prachnio did what William Knight gave him. I mean, I don't know what people want to do for him to do, rush in there and get clipped by one of those giant fucking arms of his. But yeah, the foot was mangled. It was nasty. Yeah, that fight was, You want it more from both guys, but I mean, again, William, it takes two to fight. William Knight did. I mean, I don't think he took a forward step the entire fight. So, it's more on William Knight than Practico, in my opinion.
Some people calling William Knight's performance, Ken Flo, the worst in UFC history. Please go ahead.
It's pretty bad. Listen, Brian, I would argue that's precisely why Procneo should have taken him out. It's one thing to do nothing, Brian.
Yeah.
It's another thing to offer up your head on a platter to get chopped off. It's another thing to offer up your leg to get chopped off for 15 minutes. It's one thing to do nothing and circle and run away. This was a heavy bag. I mean, again, I want to be nice.
No, you're right. It is true.
He's from New England. I know people who train him. But this was one of those things where you're scratching your head going, do you even want to be in there?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I would say, yeah, hey, Procneo, I get it. Obviously, his foot was injured. We saw that. Absolutely. But how many opportunities did William Knight give to that fighter across from him the opportunity to knock him out?
Sure.
I mean, he didn't block any kick. He wasn't doing anything. Yeah, he could swing it. But again, a higher level fighter, a guy who, you know, is top 10, top 5 in that division, takes out William Knight with ease.
Without question,
and Procneo wasn't doing that. And that's the problem. And I get it. With Procneo's set of skills, did he feel confident to go out there and beat someone like William Knight? Probably not. And that's fine. Absolutely. Yeah. If something in his gut, or if he feels like, I don't quite know how to approach this guy, that's all well and good. But a high level guy at 205 takes out William Knight probably round one midway. Yeah. So it was just an odd performance, man. And I would be very surprised if we see William Knight in the UFC. Maybe he gets back there. Right. And maybe he has some personal stuff going on. If that's the case, that's horrible. I'm sorry. But, you know, maybe he shouldn't have been in the octagon that night. If it's a technical issue, well, go back to the regional leagues, get better, figure out what's going on, and see if you can get back to the big show.
Yeah. I commend William Knight for his toughness. But for me, as the non-fighter, I don't know. I feel like Marcin Procneo is getting a little bit of a raw deal, right? Especially when his paycheck doubles just by winning the fight. And I do believe that perhaps, Kenny, you're right in terms of his belief, self-belief in his skill set. Feels like maybe William Knight gets the fight to the floor and one time he's getting grounded and pounded out of there. So mitigating risk and all of that. But I don't know. I felt like Procneo largely did everything he could, especially to the lower half, to try to get a TKO via leg kicks, but maybe could have done a little bit more upstairs. So I guess you and the commentators are in agreement on that one. All right. Jamal Pogues. What a fun name to say, you know, and his takedowns, I would think, would be pretty fun to call too. What'd you make of the heavyweight UFC heavyweight debut, I believe, for Jamal Pogues against Josh Parisian, Bri?
I thought he looked good. You know, this is a guy coming up from 205. He fought 205, and then also the next time he fights, he's 248. So, I mean, he fought Parisian, who's a full-size heavyweight, and he looked good. You know, I mean, he couldn't hold him down all that well. I got a little nervous because I had Pogues. And, you know, the way the judges are, Parisian did land more strikes, but Pogues was getting takedowns, but didn't do a lot with the takedowns. But I think he's an athletic guy. I mean, he's built a little oddly, right? Maybe he could be a 205er. But, you know, he's athletic. His power double's good. I know he broke his hand, but he had such a speed advantage over Parisian. I want to see more hands out of him. He was landing at will when he did. His 1-2 was great. His jab was great, but he found out at the end that he did break his hand. But I thought it was an okay performance. I give him a 6 out of 10. Yeah. 6 out of 10 there for him.
Kempfel, you got anything for us on Jamal Pogues before we move on?
Yeah, same thing. Listen, I think he showed a lot of toughness going in there. You know, broken hand pretty early, it looks like. So wasn't really able to use that right hand as much as he wanted. But still, the fact that he was able to win that fight in the manner that he did, solid. I think this is a great way for him to build from that. I'm not going crazy or anything like that and putting all my chips behind him at this point. But again, a win in the UFC is huge. And dealing with that kind of adversity, I think, is massive. And he's going to gain a lot of confidence because of it. So a good step forward in the right direction.
All right. And Brian Petrie, the main card opener, Alexander Hernandez against Jim Miller. Got to feel good for Hernandez. He's gone about so much of his career the right way. Steps up here on short notice in the lightweight division. He's going to go back to featherweight right now, but he's always going to have this Jim Miller scalp and a great performance and a great fight. Your thoughts on the main card opener, BP?
Great fight. Won the fight tonight. I mean, Nas, Ray Longo's guy, I believe, got fight tonight, but this is one of the fights tonight. I mean, the toughness out of Jim Miller is incredible. I mean, the guy's been in there since UFC 89. I mean, you set all these kinds of records. And Hernandez looked good. That was his best performance, in my opinion. I know Benil Dariush, he landed that right hand and everything. That's the biggest win. But performance-wise, I thought this was the best. He did not fade. He got clipped a couple times. He didn't panic. You know, he didn't rush takedowns like he's done in the past. You know, Jim Miller did have a guillotine at one point. He got out of it. And I'm glad Hernandez addressed in the fighter meeting, and they talked about in broadcast, it was all mental. He was having some mental stuff, confidence issues, this and that. I'm glad he's getting behind it, at least in this performance, because, you know, Jim Miller being 38, the old dog in there, he can still knock you out. He can still take your neck. And this was a really good performance by Alex Hernandez. I had Jim Miller in that spot, and I love Jim Miller. And it's, again, another testament to how good Jim Miller is, because even though Hernandez won the fight, I mean, Jim Miller was in every single moment. It was like a competitive fight. Hernandez was a step ahead of him, but a great fight. Loved it.
The 41 UFC appearances is just absurd.
Crazy.
Right? It was absurd last week. It's even more absurd now after that performance. He's going in there to kill Kempf. I know you didn't see the fight, but
yeah,
you know, he's throwing these left hands, trying to take a dude's head off. Mm-hmm. I mean, still just exceedingly competitive in UFC fight number 41.
Yeah, I was getting beat up by my kids last night. I looked like William Knight out there last night. Just kinda, I'm going to try to rebuild from this and learn from it.
You should.
But yeah, I was juggling two kids last night. I missed that fight. I'm going to go back and watch it. But the amount of hunger, the amount of fight that Jim Miller has in him, it's unbelievable, man.
Yeah.
It's crazy. You know, some guys you'll see with, you know, long records, and they're kind of going in there to collect a paycheck. But, you know, hearing it and you know, hearing and reading about the fight, you know, it seems like that is not going anywhere anytime soon. So still has that hunger. That's awesome, man. Jim Miller's the man. But and congratulations to Hernandez for getting that win. That's big. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Hernandez, I agree with everything Petrie said. I think you can argue this as the biggest win of his career if you look at the totality of it. And now sort of immersed in that Factory X striking system, good for him and good for Mark Montoya. And I'm excited to see Hernandez back at 45. I mean, they're easier fights than Billy Quarantello, that's for sure. Shout out to Billy Q, by the way. Longtime Anna Foreign Podcast supporter. All right. We're going to get to Nazim Sadikov with Ray Longo later in the week. So be sure to get to the DraftKings YouTube channel for the Ray Longo Minute. He and I, at the very least, will go head-to-head. We'll try to have Ken Flo be a part of that as well. And don't forget, full episodes of the Anakin Florian Podcast right now on DraftKings YouTube channel. Clips, of course, on the Anakin Florian Podcast YouTube channel, where you can also find Remember the Show with Bilal Muhammad and Jason Anik. But thank you for making the transition with us, for liking the videos, for subscribing to DraftKings. The more you like and comment on our videos, the more they're going to populate for you. At least that's what I'm told. All right. Shout out to Jamal Emmers, by the way. Outstanding performance. I watched that on my cellular telephone. All right.
Great post-fight, too.
Yeah, you're right about that. All right, let us get to some selections for another UFC fight night at the Apex. It is going to be a light heavyweight title eliminator of sorts, I guess, between Nikita Krylov and Ryan Spann. First, though, we're going to update the standings. Last week, -$40 for Brian Petrie brings him, or +40, excuse me.
I think it was plus.
Brings him to -$310 on the year. So +$40 for Brian Petrie. He's not too happy with me kind of fucking jobbing the standings. Hey, we get it right here, though. You know, hey, who went back and listened
You're
and
right.
watched the show? You know, I did.
Right.
I mean, I
Thank
did.
You.
I put in the time. Ken Flo, -$480. Forgettable right. week for
you're,
Ken
you're
Flo.
You're breaking up. You're breaking up. I can't hear you, John. Can't quite. Sounded like you said -$480. Is that?
I think so. Hey.
Oh. Okay.
You're scared.
Have a good
one,
guys. This is my last podcast. Damn.
You're scaring me because I have Cody very frustrated with me these days. He insisted that I get these new Deco routers or whatever. So hopefully my camera's not freezing. Have I been freezing today, boys? How's the new Wi-Fi?
It's good.
It's pretty solid. A couple freezes, but
like Kenny said. Just
I know.
We're still freezing at this point, what is a guy to do? I'll do anything. I said to Cody before I spent $200 on these routers, are you sure that I shouldn't buy anything like nicer than these? And for the record, I'm not charging the podcast anything on this stuff, but still freezing up. That's bad news, man. What do I got to do?
Did you hardwire?
Oh, I don't even know what hardwiring is. All right. So the updated standings, -310. Unless I'm breaking up for Petrie, and -650 for Ken Flo. Keep in mind, these guys, though, are picking all these fights that they don't necessarily have to. But we'll see if they up the ante this week. It'll lock of the week every now and again. Try to get that balance back to black. First up at welterweight, Mike Malott Love saying that in a Boston accent, huh? You punch that team, Mike Malotte. Mike Malotte, only 23 years old, if my script is accurate. Mike Malotte, minus 215. Johan Lainish, plus 185. Malotte, team alpha male. Knocked out Mickey Gall in his UFC debut last April. Not really sure why the layoff, Brian Petrie. He did compete and win in a grappling setting last December. Lainish on the other side, another Canadian.
Yeah.
Canada versus Canada here. He was fortunate, in my opinion, to escape with a split over Darian Weeks last year in UFC 279. Mike Malotte, Johan Lainish, Brian Petrie, which way you go?
Yeah, I'm going to keep this quick because I really want to get to Tatiana Suarez here. Malotte's well-rounded. You know, these Canadian bangers here, his last four wins have aged very well prior to the UFC, that is, and obviously knocking out Mickey Gall where he got a little buzz in, as well. Lainish is 1-1 UFC, could be 0-2. He's a one-trick pony with his power. Give me Malotte. Kind of love it here, too. Minus 215 is kind of my sweet spot when I like to play. If I'm playing multiple units, that number doesn't scare me, even though he's a little improved in the UFC. I think he gets it done, maybe by finish, but yeah, give me Malotte. Yeah.
But Brian Petrie not willing to go $430 to pay $200 today, folks. He's just going with the 215. Right. Sounds like you thought about it. One unit on Mike Malotte.
Right.
Ken Flo, Mike Malotte, Johan Lainish, which way are you going?
Mike Malotte. I used to know him, Mike Malotte.
I bet you did. Fucking Dover, Massachusetts. Mikey, hey, shout out to fucking Mike Malotte if you're listening in Dover, man. Shout out to fucking any Mike Malotte out there that's listening.
Played hockey. Good hockey player. All right. Mike Malotte against Johan. Listen, I think that, you know, both guys fight very similarly. I think Malotte is a bit of a better athlete, a little faster, a little sharper on the ground. So I like Malotte here as well. Malotte!
Kempfler likes that, those fast twitch muscle fibers possessed by Mike Malotte. All right. I am losing my mind. We got about 100 episodes left. This is episode 390. We're going to go till 500, then we're going to cancel the show. All right, flyweight. Tatiana Suarez, minus 740. This is the updated number right now on DraftKings Sportsbook. Minus 740, despite a layoff that dates to 2019. I mean, if that doesn't speak to projected greatness, I don't know what does. Montana De La Rosa comes back plus 540. Brian Petrie, your mic is hot.
Yeah, young crown queen is back. I mean, I think everyone who watches MMA knows how talented Tatiana Suarez is. You know, injuries have held her back a little bit, comes from a good camp. And I'm going to boldly state what everyone in the fucking world has already stated. She would be champion if she continued to fight. I think she's that good. Glad she's up at 125 now. She's got a good frame, right? She's 5'5", but she's long. And her wrestling is bar none. But sheesh, 4 years off. I mean, listen, D. Cruz, you better plug his ears. I know he doesn't believe in ring rust, but I mean, hopefully she has the same mentality because she's going to need it. It's a long time to be away. Yeah, De La Rosa has been fighting steadily since coming off the top where she looked really good. But since coming off the Ultimate Fighter, it's been win-loss, a little inconsistent, very tough. Never been finished in the UFC. He's been finished outside the UFC. But regardless of this giant fucking number, I think Suarez is a special talent. I think she's 4 years away. I think she's been grinding. I think mentally it's helping her. She is dating, engaged, married to Patchy Mix, who's a very good fighter. I think that's only going to improve her. The words in Extreme Couture, when she's in the room, she's an absolute beast. So the number doesn't scare me. The layoff doesn't scare me. I like a finish here, probably by submission, maybe TKO, but Suarez by submission, by finish, any kind of finish, add that to my card. And I'm not going to lock her up. This could easily be a lock, but I'm no chump. I'm not going to lock up a minus 740, okay? I'm not a square. So give me Suarez by finish, though.
Can't do it. Can't lock her up. Would not be prudent at minus 740. So, Kenny, seems as though Suarez is expected to eventually move back down to strawweight. Remains to be seen, but she's 8-0 right now. Hasn't fought since a 2019 win over Nina Nunes. That was at UFC 238, about 46 pay-per-views ago. Initially, she was going to come back in 2021 against your friend Roxanne Modafferi. That fight did not materialize. And on the other side, we have Montana De La Rosa. I believe she still reps Fortis MMA, just one win spanning her last four. And she has not fought since a decision loss to Macy Barber. That was April of 2022. Ken Flo, Suarez, De La Rosa at flyweight. Who do you like?
Yeah, you know, it's such a big number, I think, and a lot of that has to do with her last fight against Macy Barber. You know, it's like, if Macy Barber did that to her, what do you think Tatiana Suarez is going to do? I say that respectfully. Just, she didn't have an answer, you know, for the clinch game. She didn't have an answer for that type of physicality. And Tatiana Suarez is a much bigger problem than Macy Barber, in my opinion. So I think Suarez gets it done. If I put units on Suarez, does that help me at all? I mean, does it help me at all? Does it get the number? Not really, but Suarez wins this, man, pretty easily.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you could do as much. I mean, you could put as much as 4 G's on her if you really wanted to.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
And by the way, you know, I feel like I'm oftentimes the oldest guy in the room, not on this podcast necessarily, right? But that maybe I'm getting to the point where people like laugh at my jokes because I'm old. I don't know. You know, this is not a joke though necessarily. But if you are just listening to the show, I strongly suggest checking out the video so you can see Kemflo's hat.
I like that. It is pointy.
Choo, choo.
It's a cool hat, though.
Where are we going? You know? Hey, it's distracting. It's looks like what can I say? It's
driving
it's
the T.
Not formed properly. All right, here we go.
If you're driving the T in Boston, just put that hat on. Nobody would know any different. All right. At heavyweight, we now have what is a pick'em, Augusto Sakai -110, Dontel Mays -110. So Sakai was 15-1-1, Kenny, after a decision win over Blagoy Ivanov in May of 2020, right? That results in him getting a couple straight main events, loses both of those, then two more. So now for Sakai, the one-time budding heavyweight contender, it's four successive losses by knockout or TKO. Here he draws Dontel Mays. Who do you have, Ken Flo? Pick him at heavyweight.
Gosh, I don't know. I see Sakai as a guy who really has a lot of potential. I think Mays has a lot of potential as well. But I think from a skill perspective, experience perspective, Sakai probably gets it done here. Wouldn't be surprised if Mays gets the win. But I'm gonna go with Sakai.
Nice.
Hey, Bri, the red on Augusto Sakai's Wikipedia page right now is blinding. Mm-hmm. Does he green stripe it this weekend against your boy Dontel Mays? Dontel the hyphen. I like the name Dontel. I named my son Hunter, but you can do worse than fucking Dontel.
Dontel's a cool name. Listen, Pick'em Petrie is what they're calling me in the streets.
Really?
No one's calling me that. Because I love Pick'em fights and I love this fight. I was at Dontel Mays' amateur debut. He fought a guy that I kind of trained with, and he scared the entire fucking gym we were at. 6'6 monster just destroyed this guy. But listen, he bought some wrestling shoes, and he bought a singlet because this guy is grappling, is getting drastically better from what it was, and so is his cardio. You know, he's 6'6", he's got to come boxing and stuff, but you look at Sakai and you put him on his back, he's a fish out of water. You know, four losses, four finishes, and Dontel Mays coming off that loss over, he just popped for steroids, so now it's a no contest, but that Olympic Egyptian wrestler, and it was a split decision, it was a close fight. I think Mays is really starting to find himself here. He's heavy on top. His strikes are good. He has a couple submissions, but I'm not worried about that. I think he's going to close the show with strikes. And you know what? Since they call me Pick'em Petrie, no one does. I'm going to go two-unit lock on as well on this. Give me Dontel Mays, two-unit lock, Adam Pick'em Price. Let's go.
All right, so two-unit, that's so $220 to pay $200.
Yes,
is that correct?
Yes,
right.
Sir.
Thank you. We want to get this right, you know. Dontel Mays. -110 for two units for Brian Petrie. By the way, the Egyptian in question, Hamdi Abdelwahab. Got a lot of fun names to say on the program today. All right, co-main event at middleweight. Petrie will lead us here, and then Kenflo on the main event. Co-main event at middleweight, 11th-ranked Andre Muniz, -180, taking on the unranked Brendan All-In Allen, who's +155. Brian Muniz has won 9 in a row. He's 5-0 in the UFC after a win over Uriah Hall. That was at UFC 276 last July. On the other side, BA has won 3 in a row, 5 of his last 6. Outstanding co-main event, Brian Petrie. Which way you go?
Absolutely love this fight. It's dancing all over my brain, too. It's just laughing at me because I don't have a good read on it. No clear winner. I haven't taken a dog shot yet. Usually I'm a dog hunter, dog the bounty hunter. But, you know, at 155, Allen is appealing. But I think Muniz is special. My only complaint was his last fight against Uriah Hall. I really felt like if he opened up Uriah with some strikes more, he could have maybe found the submission. I think he was just a little too heavy on the submissions, which he's a specialist. He's great. He's incredible. But I just felt like he could have opened him up more. And Brendan Allen hasn't been submitted since 2018 by Trevin Giles. He's been submitted before, rear naked choke, but not for a while. He considers himself a grappler as well. He got taken down 7 times with Jacob Malkoon, who is a good wrestler, but Muniz does have a really good early first round entry. It's powerful. He can get you down. And usually when he gets you down once, you don't get back up. If it stays on the feet, Allen, they both have been two of his four losses. Muniz, that is, has come by knockout. Brendan Allen's had some chin problems as well. So they stay on the feet. It's going to be maybe kind of a watch. I think Brendan Allen maybe has better boxing. Muniz has powerful kicks, good high kicks. But Muniz, you know, he might be on that secret juice that Paulo Costa is taking, because this is a well put together guy. I'm going to go Muniz by sub here. I don't love it. I'll probably just prop it, but as the sake of the show, give me Andre Muniz.
And thanks for, you know, throwing out the method of victory when you're not required to do so.
Of course.
Ken Flo, what do you have for us on the co-main event, brother?
Yeah, I think Muniz is one of those guys who is obviously a specialist, and I certainly think he's capable of submitting even the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt, Brendan Allen. But when you look at, you know, the ways that Allen has lost, it's been by TKO, punches on the feet, where Allen just starts getting a little crazy, stays in the pocket, gets wild, and gets caught. I don't see that necessarily happening here against Muniz, you know, not to the point where he can put his lights out. I do think you got to watch out for that early start from the Brazilian, who is most certainly going to try to take this fight to the ground. And hey, he could absolutely finish him in the first round. But I think Allen's going to get stronger as this fight goes on. He's going to get a little smarter, I think, and get on to the takedowns of Muniz. And I think Allen wins this by decision. I think he's going to find a way to, or he even catches Muniz on the feet and takes him out. I don't think Muniz is the best striker in the world. I've seen him slow down, arms start to drop a little bit. So absolutely, you know, special on the ground. Love what he's doing there. A big fan of jiu-jitsu, obviously. But I'm going to go with Brendan Allen.
Love it.
Brendan Allen plus 155 for Ken Flo. And by the way, Ken Flo is sneaky, a fashion icon, right? So say what I want about his hat, right? But it's probably like fashion forward, right? Like no one's ever going to confuse me with being fashion forward. I stand by my tailor, Mark Russell, against anybody else's. But my daughters are just banging on me all the time. I wear sweatshorts and severe MMA podcast shirts that say striking and grappling and aggression and control.
There you go.
So I'm sure like Ken Flo's wife, you know, America's Next Top Model wife, probably thinks that hat's awesome. So
John, can I ask you a real quick question?
Yeah, please. I'm here all day.
Do you wear jorts? Jean shorts?
No, I do not. Okay, good, why good, should good. I? Ken Flo has some.
Well, like, yeah, Kenny's got the frayed tight on the thighs. I mean, like the 90s in sync shorts. That's what I was meant. Hopefully you don't wear that, like the carpenter shorts where you can put your hammer on the side.
I don't know. I mean, I wonder what Ken Flo's got on the lower half, but we kind of got to move on to the main event. So,
nothing. Absolutely nothing.
It's a light heavyweight main event, Kenny. Number six, Nikita Krylov, minus 165. Eighth ranked Ryan Spann, plus 140. Division not as wide open as necessarily we're being led to believe. More on that in a moment. But Ken Flo, we'll start with you on this. Ready? Over under 15 UFC appearances thus far for Nikita Krylov. Over under 15 UFC stats for Nikita Krylov.
Man, he started pretty young. He did. And has been pretty consistent. I'd say over.
Over would be the correct answer. Circle gets the square. Second UFC stint for Nikita Krylov. This will be his 18th UFC appearance overall. Debuted all the way back in UFC 164 in 2013. On the other side, we have Ryan Spann. He's won two in a row, knocked out Dominic Reyes last year. Ken Flo, who do you have in the main event? Krylov, the favorite, or Spann, the underdog?
Man, this is a tough one. I think that Spann is a little bit more dangerous when it comes to the feet. I think Krylov will keep a high-pressure game. I think he'll most likely throw more volume. Spann, I think, a little bit more dangerous just because of that power and athleticism that he displays. And I don't know. He catches you when you kind of least expect it. And I think Krylov can get a little wild at times. But I think if Krylov's able to mix things together, hit those takedowns, play it round by round, and be smart and use proper tactics against someone like Spann, I think he can tire him out. I think he can wear him down over time. Krylov always seems to come in shape. I like Krylov here. Not super confident. I think there's a couple of these that I may change throughout the week as we go on, depending on the weigh-ins and things like that. But give me Krylov, man.
All right, Kemfo likes the favorite, Nikita Krylov. Now, I say, Bri, the division not as wide open as maybe it was once believed to be. Jamal Hill's the champion. Mm-hmm. And if Jiří Procházka is healthy, he's going to get the next championship opportunity. Of course, Magomed Ankalaev is lurking. I guess Jan Błachowicz is to whatever degree as well. Anthony Smith. Mm-hmm. But it stands to reason, even Krylov or Spann, whoever emerges, even with a first round finish, which actually has a high probability here, mm-hmm. isn't necessarily going to be getting a title shot, you know, in the next calendar year. All of that being said, it's a big fight at 205, and we need to know who you think wins it.
Yeah, love this fight. Loyal Anakin Florian listener Jake Ford generously offered up his services at the beginning of the year and said, hey, let me break down all your fights for you. Every pick you make, I'll put it in a spreadsheet. And he informed me today that my light heavyweight picks, for lack of a better term, have been absolute dog shit. So I need to lock in and pick winners here. Spann is huge for 205. Yeah, he's a big boy. He has some serious skill, big power, and an absolute death choke. His guillotine is something nasty. But I'm concerned about the cardio. Kenny touched on it. He gassed hard in that Sam Alvey fight. That's the only sample size we have because Spann doesn't get paid by the minute. The guy gets out of there early. And Krylov's been around forever. You know, he debuted in 2012, his MMA debut, that is. Fought at heavyweight. Now he's at 205. And the best word to describe him is sturdy. He's just a sturdy dude. He goes out there and gets hard-fought wins or even some hard-fought losses. But his biggest issue is if there's a guy that has a special submission, like a Paul Craig, avoid that triangle. Nikita Krylov finds himself in those positions. You know what I mean? He's lost a lot by submission. So that troubles me because Ryan Spann has that ghillie that could be a problem. So I'm so torn because Spann, can he go five rounds? I don't know. Can Nikita Krylov avoid the ghillie? I don't know. Kenny and I are opposite all day today. So I love this. Give me the dog pick and Ryan Spann by submission. One of us is going to have a great fucking week. Yeah. But yeah, that's the way I see it. So let's have some fun, boys.
Could get ugly.
I love it.
Yeah.
All right, at Brian Petrie MMA, if you want more from him, he also hosts a show called the MMA Takes Podcast, which I hear is blowing up. I don't know if it has anything to do with Little Rub from the Anakin Florian Podcast.
I think it has a lot to do with that, John.
We appreciate you. Have a great day and a better evening, and we will talk to you next week in advance of the big one, UFC 285, brother.
Absolutely. Kenny, you're going to be in Ohio this Saturday. It's about 3.5-4 hours away from me. Is it just gi or no gi?
We got a gi on Saturday, no gi on Sunday.
Okay, because I can dust off the rash guards like John Donahue and show up if I need to. But have fun, Ken. I love you, boys.
Thank you, brother.
Sounds like a lot of driving. I mean, I think Brian Petrie does enough driving. I don't know that he needs to go to the seminar. Exactly. But at Kenny Florian on Instagram if you want more of that. One more sleep merchandise, by the way, is at millions.co. Before we get to all of that, I do want to hear from our producer, Cody Merrow. And as we bring on Cody for the Merrow Seconds, that beard's starting to thicken up. Is that just the winter there in the Northeast or what?
No, so this is a protest. It's been me on the bench. You know, I haven't shaved since I've been on the show. It's been like 4 weeks, so I'm back. Cody's back. No.
Oh, but Cody's back.
I've been looking at Kenflo every week, and I'm just like, damn, like maybe my beard can look that good. It doesn't, but still.
So I just want to say before you get into whatever you have for us and the bonuses, I think we forgot. So maybe you could get that for us if you don't already have it. But Tatiana Suarez, right? She can run. Like I remember one time in 2008, Kenny was telling me that to sort of kickstart a training camp, or this was even maybe when he didn't have a fight on the books, he would just go run a mile as fast as he could in like 6 minutes. And I'm like, dude, you are a maniac, right? Just leave the rest of us alone. But Tatiana Suarez can run. Like genetically, she can just run and long distances. And she hasn't been able to do that, obviously, for a time, and knee injuries, whatever else. But I just think of all the great things we had to say about Tatiana Suarez when I did a Modelo appearance with her. One thing that kept coming up was just running. And I don't know. I really believe in her. I believe in her cardio. And I don't know. I think it's going to be an emotional walk, but I'm excited to have Tatiana Suarez back. So I just wanted to say that before we get to Cody.
Yeah, and a lot of mental hurdles, you know, when it comes to, you know, you're dealing with your knees. You only got two of them, you know, they don't get better over time. So, you know, very emotional. You know, everyone has said that Tatiana Suarez's ceiling is championship or bust. I'm just excited to see her back in there. And, you know, she adds an interesting wrinkle to the mix. We just saw Erin Blanchfield, a very skilled grappler, go out there and dominate Jessica Andrade. Tatiana Suarez is cut from that same cloth. So, you know, if Valentina's not in the wrestling room, I don't know what she's doing.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I don't know what Suarez is intending to do in terms of 15 and 25. Obviously, this one's a 25, and I think that's a good thing. And it's going to be interesting, right? I mean, you have guys like Volkanovski who say they want to fight four times a year. John Jones seemingly is of that mentality that he wants to fight at least twice, if not three times this year. I mean, can you imagine if John Jones comes back in July after fighting here in March? Be pretty exciting. So good to have Suarez back.
Yeah, well, and very exciting stuff. That's definitely something that I've been talking to our friends at DraftKings about, as far as, you know, if we get Conor twice this year, if we get John Jones three times, you know, looking like a pretty good year for the MMA leader as we get started here. But looking back at last weekend, the fight of the night, I mean, Nazim Sadikov and Evan Elder, was there any other choice? I thought that that fight was an absolute banger.
So I'm glad they got the bonus, right? Because oftentimes it seems like the main card participants are rewarded. I thought Jim Miller and Alexander Hernandez certainly was bonus worthy. But yes, great to have Naz come through and get the win, and obviously get the bonus as well, because I think that's more life-changing than the money would have been for Jim Miller. I'm sure for Alexander Hernandez, there will be something discretionarily. But yeah, we'll have Longo on, might even have Mr. Sadikov himself later in the week here on the Anakin Florian podcast, but very excited. And I know Cody and Longo are like this, right? So it's probably pretty special for you to see Nazim. You've been hearing about Nazim for several years. To see him shine on the UFC stage, I think for you is probably pretty special.
Well, Longo Weidman MMA, huh? Gym of the Year 2023, leading candidate. Right?
No, I mean, come on. Like, absolutely not. Longo's not my coach of the year.
Did he get his one coach of the year for the decade of the podcast? Was that it?
I picked him last year. I can't. Like,
right.
You know,
it's in the contract. I mean, that's legally binding. So, but yeah, I mean, exciting stuff.
Dude, we have, I know, we got, sorry to cut you out. We got the Longo limp now. Print the shirts. And anybody see him walking in? We got the fucking Longo limp. I mean,
well, that's,
I'm going to be limping sooner or later.
Our South Florida friend Josh Cohen tweeted about that. He's like, well, what is wrong with Longo? I'm like, he's just got huge balls. So, you know, like, really? It's so hard when you're walking to the octagon with giant testicles that you just got to limp sometimes, you know? Swag.
Oh,
but
goodness.
Those two, I texted.
They must have grown. They must have grown because he was not limping. No, we know that the declines are very tough for Ray right now. And, please, now everybody's going to bring this to his attention that I was talking about the Longo limp. So.
Yeah, of course. But I texted him, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see this rematch with two numbers by their names in the future. Both young guys, Elder's 25 years old, you know, like the future is very bright for both of these guys. I thought they showed out and deserved that 50K. The other two 50K bonuses, performance of the night, Aaron Blanchfield, obviously, and then Mayra Bueno Silva with the dominant performance.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah, they like to reward the leg submissions if Sean Shelby has anything to say about it. But no, you're absolutely right about Elder. Am I pronouncing that right? Evan Elder? Yeah, dude, that was a great fight. I watched it on my cellular telephone on mute, but it was a great, great fight. And you're right. I think the ceiling for both those guys is exceedingly high. So yes, great to have them bonused. And we'll ask Longo in a couple days if he gets any of that bonus. I think it should all go to the athlete. We'll see what Ray has to say about that.
He's got to get his bread buttered somewhere, right? It's not from us. Ha! Just kidding. Ray's getting taken care of, everybody. Lay off in the comments.
No, he is. Leave us alone.
The Mac is back. The Mac, Conor McGregor, finally is in Las Vegas for the filming of The Ultimate Fighter. I got to find some way to get Michael Chandler that Houston jersey, right? Maybe get that some showtime. Like, I could see him wearing it on Ultimate Fighter, right? Maybe I'll put like a little Anakin Florian logo on it or something. Maybe that's a little too biased.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what the tie-in to the Astros would be for him. And he lost that fight in Houston, obviously, right. As you well know. Well, it was the first time we met, if I'm not mistaken. But no, I mean, yes, we can get him the jersey. I just don't know.
Doesn't he seem like the kind of guy, though, that would, you know, some people would be like, oh, I never want to remember that again. But he's the kind of guy who'd be like, no, that's motivation. I look at that jersey every morning to remind me of my potential, you know, like some type of diatribe. But the reason I brought up Conor, did you see he got hit by a bike a couple weeks ago? Has that ever happened to you guys? You ever hit a bike or oncoming traffic or anything like that?
Yeah, I yelled at by a school of bikers today because I was passing them because, you know,
wow,
they took up the whole street.
They must listen to the podcast and know you don't train, or else they wouldn't fuck with you like that, right?
Yeah. You know, actually, I'm going to get myself in trouble. You know, bikers are not a breed with which to fuck.
Biker. Don't mess with you're them. Talking like
they'll be coming at
like Orange County chopper bikers?
No, not motorcycles. No, I'm just saying like these 30, men. Men in South Florida be coming at me, you know, because they own the road. And now I learned that lesson the hard way today.
Interesting. A few weeks ago, I don't know if you saw, John, but Renato Moicano was talking about how he learned English and his swearing acumen through playing Call of Duty. And I just wanted to say, you know, me fucking too, Renato, me too.
Yeah, right. Kenny, I don't know if you saw this, but it's like the reason he swears so much, I guess, is because that's communicatively funny. Is how he learned English. However you can learn English, right? Say it all the time, right? I mean, obviously the number one way to resonate with the fan base is to fight and fight off. And number two, if you're an international fighter, is to learn how to speak English. You know, it'll take you to the next level. Ask Junior Dos Santos.
Ask Deveson Figueiredo, huh? Motherfucker. He's like my favorite.
I'll listen to you.
Just some quick.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. Do you want to comment on that?
If he's your favorite, I have a Deveson Figueiredo signed t-shirt here that I'm going to send to you. It's probably your size, dude.
What is it? What do you mean?
Look at that.
Figueiredo, motherfucker. He's the man. I love him.
He screams professional athlete. There's something about when he walks in the room, no doubt. Deus de Geha, God of War.
Deus de Geha. Kenny's like, shut the fuck up.
Geha.
Geha. You pronounce it wrong.
Three and one on the week.
Yeah. See?
So just a couple of quick fight announcements to rattle off since I haven't been here in a while. Cheeto versus Sandhagen obviously was supposed to be last weekend, moved to March 25th. It moves to a 30-foot cage versus a 25-foot cage, if I'm not mistaken. And Sandhagen's been training with Superlek. I think that's a very interesting wrinkle. I think that the bigger cage benefits Sandhagen as opposed to benefiting Cheeto, but that's going to be an absolute banger. Max Holloway is going to fight Arnold Allen on April 15th, reportedly. Max opened at a minus 150 on DK Sportsbook. I think you're looking at a lot of value in Arnold Allen there. And then Anthony Smith is rebooked to fight Johnny Walker as the May 13th headliner. So, you know, a couple of good bangers coming down the line, all those reports via ESPN.
Stuff. I hadn't seen Anthony Smith and Johnny Walker, so.
Yeah, that's a crazy fight, huh? It'd be interesting. Love to see Johnny Walker. So crazy lines over our friends at DK Sportsbook, code AF Pod when the code is active. John Jones is about a minus 150 favorite. He hasn't been that low in the odds since fighting Stefan Bonner at UFC 94 in 2009. The number one song was Just Dance by Lady Gaga. I know, John, that is a favorite of yours.
Nope, it is. Wow, that's interesting. I really can't wait to hear which way Ken Flo falls on that John Jones Cetal Gon fight. I'm going to predict that he's going to go Jones right now, and then we'll see where he goes next week.
So as you always say, John, bet the number. You know, Saif Saud, we had on the program a couple weeks ago, he's going to be in the corner of Jeff Neal. Jeff Neal's a plus 350 dog against Shavkat Rakhmonov. I don't know how somebody as experienced and, you know, as battle-tested as Jeff Neal is a plus 350 against anybody. I mean, Shavkat Rakhmonov is impressive, but that number just stood out to me, so I'm interested to see that one as well.
Yeah, I wonder how people handicap that fight versus Jack Della Maddalena and Randy Brown, because a lot of people suggested, man, Randy Brown UFC tested, and even I think Jack was sort of digging in deeper for what he thought was going to be a longer fight. But I just think sometimes you see Shavkat Rakhmonov at that number, and then he sort of reminds you why he deserves that type of respect. We'll see.
Yeah, I'm interested for sure. And then, you know, circling back, my boy Michael Chandler's a pick'em against McGregor. I mean, the sport is inarguably better with McGregor in it. That's no denigration on Conor, but I don't know how you look at Michael Chandler's resume over the last couple of years in the same time that Conor's been out, and to think that he's a pick'em against Conor, I think is absolutely insane. So I'll be really interested to see how that line moves, especially with the fact that the show is going to give us a lot of insight into, you know, Conor's training and how he's looking. So, you know, that line I think is going to move a lot, you know, in the next couple of months.
I mean, I would say, because he's reckless and he's going against a very good counter-striker.
He might be the most reckless.
We'll see.
Going against the best counter-striker. Yeah. So,
right.
It's very much immovable object versus a impressive force, right? Or whatever.
Yeah. But what Connor's going to show up, we don't know.
Exactly. And then last thing, Cocaine Bear, which got a lot of pub on the last pay-per-view. It's based on a true story. In 1985 in Knoxville, Tennessee, a bear ate 75 pounds of cocaine, which is valued at $2 million. The bear did die because of that from a heart failure, but the bear is taxidermied. It sits in a mall in Kentucky, if you're curious. So thank you, Bruce Buffer. Cocaine
bear. Wow. That is good stuff. I said it probably three or four more times, actually, than Bruce Buffer. Cocaine bear. I want to see it. I want to see it. I saw a good documentary called Just Bear back in the day. I think there's no talking, just following a bear. Cocaine Bear, though, in theaters later this month. All right. Thank you all for checking the show out. Don't forget, second episode comes down later this week. We will help Ray Longo celebrate his UFC debutante getting it done in Las Vegas. And we will also have some other treats for you later in the week. So keep it locked to the DraftKings YouTube channel. Don't forget millions.co for the One More Sleep merchandise. We will have a special GOAT design out in advance of the return of John Jones. AnnickFlorianPodcast.com for all your other merchandise needs. Use code LONGO because I think that helps Ray. And we will talk to you in a few days. Thank you to Brian Petrie and Cody Merrill. For Ken Flo, I'm John Anik. We will talk to you probably on Thursday. Until then, have a great week, great day, better evening, rest of the weekend. You'll later. Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family owned from the start. Same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Beckley SAB to CV 2024, Proximo, Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.